Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Maternal ambivalence as a literal conflicting of needs, where, you know, your needs as a person, as a human, are constantly in, you know, tension with the needs that your children have. And it's kind of like, whose mouth do you feed, right? I know I experience that every day, every hour. Like, and so, like, are there ways that I can find where we're both being fed, right, at the same time? Welcome to another episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. This episode has a slightly different format because I'm sharing in conversation with my dear friend, Lee Noel Wilson, about a collaboration we've been working on this year. Lee is an artist and mother to three kiddos living in Baltimore, Maryland. Her work has been exhibited nationally and internationally, most notably New York City and Scotland. And she's also completed urban art pieces in Norway, France, Northern Ireland, and Chile. In 2019, she founded Milked, a new arts publication featuring visual art, photography, and the written word by female artists investigating the maternal figure and form. Lee is a figurative artist who builds autobiographical drawings that investigate the emotional and ambivalent undertones within birth, domestic labor, and human relationship. I interviewed Lee very early on for this podcast in episode 17, so please check out that interview to hear more about Lee, more about her work and her life and practice. And so, as I mentioned, today Lee and I are going to share about a collaboration we've been working on. In 2019, we pitched a project proposal to Elsewhere Studios and Residency in Paonia, Colorado, to do a residency together there. To quote our proposal, it says, "During their residency time with Elsewhere Studios, Butine and Noel Wilson will create a collaborative project that responds to the theme of maternal ambivalence, in part as a response to the books The Monster Within, The Hidden Side of Motherhood by Barbara Almond and Mother is a Verb by Sarah Knott. Too often we hear stories and view depictions of blissful mothering or monstrous mothering, a title used by Almond. Kaylin and Lee will investigate the tension, pulling, and paradox felt within a mother's mind while reflecting on the equivocal journey of the maternal body itself." So Lee's here today, and we are about to wrap up this project, and we wanted to record an episode just kind of talking about this experience, what it was like to collaborate, and we're going to open up and pretty candidly share about our own experience of maternal ambivalence. But first, Lee, why don't you share with us what happened with this proposal? Because it ended up changing quite a bit along the way. And why didn't we go to Elsewhere in 2020 like we thought we were going to?
Yes. Well, hi, Kaylin.
Hi.
First and foremost, thanks so much for having me on again. I feel quite honored to embrace your amazing podcast. I know it's been beautiful to see how the podcast has grown since, you know, since way back episode 17.
Yes.
But yes. So, I mean, the obvious answer is the pandemic, capital yes. T, capital P. I feel like everybody's life, you know, has severely altered. We don't even need to go into that, but ultimately it was for the pandemic. We proposed the project in 2019. I remember being super stoked with you sitting in a cafe on, you know, Google Gmail at the same time, like writing notes, all that kind of fun stuff. And, excited to to submit. We got in, we got waitlisted, which we were very excited for, kind of like the first in line if there was, you know, a dropout or a change to scheduling, et cetera, et cetera. The pandemic obviously changed absolutely everything about scheduling. and so like everybody shut down and then, I think
we just thought it was right. Like we're like, okay, we're not going elsewhere.
Right. Like it's done and done kind of thing. I think what was the most exciting kind of as we started getting, you know, I know we're not through the pandemic, but you know, through the heap of 2020, people started opening back up in 2021. It was really exciting to see the different organizations that went back and didn't really end up fully dropping the artists that got all right. messed up in 2020. So that was exciting. So we got an email that like mysterious little ding.
Yep.
Got
completely
the email.
Out of nowhere. Right. Like a year and a half later.
Right. Saying that there was a spot that, you know, that they were trying to, you know, invite back their artists that had gotten canceled. And mm-hmm. one artist could no longer go. And so since we were the first on the wait list, they opened it up to us.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, I had gotten pregnant by then.
Yeah. So that was like March or April of this year of 2021, right. that 2021. They were like, hey, you guys were on our wait list for 2020. We're bringing back the 2020 artists, but somebody can't come. So we want you guys to come. And we were like, oh, yay.
Right.
And then like, oh, wait, like when is this again?
I am already 6 months pregnant at this time. Yes. Like, oh, wait, the frantic texting of each other. You know, what's going on? What's going on? And so I kind of feel like this was actually kind of a, like, you know, you say you have those sayings like a cursed blessing or the silver mm-hmm. lining or like the double-edged sword, you know, like all those kind of things that articulate kind of like something that feels really, you know, upsetting at first, but then ultimately turns into something really good. Mm-hmm. And so what was upsetting at first was that we discovered that the date we were supposed to go was literally 2 weeks after my due date.
Yeah.
So, you know, mostly everyone listening to this podcast can, you know, probably relate to the fact that you can barely walk upstairs,
right?
Let alone fly out to Colorado 2 weeks postpartum. So that was really disappointing at first. But then I think something that it opened up was actually kind of like a new way to interpret what our proposal was from the very beginning, mm-hmm. you know, and that we had proposed this idea of maternal ambivalence and like, here's something that literally induces maternal ambivalence, like, right. you know, and, you know, I think that one could, you know, either get really discouraged by that, or you could, you know, have, you know, how would you say this? Like kick off your creative thinking and you could mm-hmm. try and like manipulate the plan into a different execution. And, mm-hmm. So we decided to try and see what it would look like if you went to the studio or to the residency and if I stay at home mm-hmm. and kind of do this like coinciding double experience of like what it's like to be, you know, at home making art and what it's like to actually go somewhere into a residency. And I think that it's an interesting tension because that's the tension that parent artists feel all the time.
I know. It's like we were the living, like we had a physical iteration of, you know, what it, I don't know. It was like an emphasized experience of.
Right. Or like what one person usually feels
right.
paradoxically inside just themselves. Like we were like the two part, like,
right. Like we were
picture
kind
of that.
Doing it together. Right. Yeah. Because you were like, oh, I'm staying at home and I'm cocooning and I just had this baby and I'm just gonna, you know, stay here in my safety net and like have this experience. And I was like, peace out. I'm going to Colorado. And
I mean, if I were to like make a person of like, or like make like a, you know, what would you call that? Like a, I guess just an image. It's like you were the artist and I was the mother kind of like yeah. in one embodied project.
Yeah.
And then trying to like work all of that out in the midst of like the work that we were making and like, So it was an interesting thing.
It was. And I want to say too, like, how generous I feel like you were with, you know, just kind of, you know, cause our original idea was to go out there together and to kind of be presented with this, oh, well, we can't make that work at this time. You know, are you willing to let us postpone another year? And of course they were right. Like, we just want to be done with you group, like who applied.
We're done postponing.
Which is totally fine.
Right. Everybody wants to be done postponing.
Right. And so just kind of having that conversation of like, is it worth still trying to make this work, you know? And knowing that you wouldn't be able to come, but that, you know, you were still, I don't know, like, okay with me going without you and still kind of using it as a container for exploring this project, just felt really generous of you. So thanks, Lee.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. It's very sweet. I think that ultimately I think what was driving that was that this feels like too big of a topic to kind of say like, oh, sorry, that got canceled. I couldn't execute that project, you know? Right. And I feel like a lot of artists who are parents can relate to that a ton. Like we all say like, oh man, studio time is so scarce. I have all these thoughts in my brain and then I can't get into the studio until months later to actually execute them, you know?
Right.
And so I feel like it was almost kind of, I don't know 100% know how to explain the feeling, but it was like, oh man, if I can't get to the studio, but no, I can send Kaylin.
Right.
Like, let's get this done. it was kind of like, no, if I can't use this arm, I'm just going to throw the other one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, however you're trying to just kind of like, you know, push this into being, you know,
right.
Felt too crucial to just let it fall off the cliff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we should share a little bit about what our actual proposal was, like what was kind of our vision for the project before we talk about like how it actually went. So I'll just share that we basically had this idea for exploring maternal ambivalence, or our experience of exploring maternal ambivalence. And we'll talk about our sort of definition of that in a minute, but we wanted to explore this topic through a series of stages and like different outlets of expression. So we had kind of a journaling phase where we both journaled about our experience of mothering that specific day, and we had some questions that we answered. And then we had kind of a sketchbook, like loose drawing, kind of more like an artistic journaling phase, where we, you know, kind of started to put form and mark making into our conversation about, our maternal experience during that time frame. And then we took those drawings, and ultimately our goal was to make three large pieces each. So the final product being, you know, kind of this premeditated work that we won't necessarily use in like whatever we end up doing with these larger pieces. So we have these drawings and this journaling. But then the six big pieces, which are all the same size. How big are they? 3x4?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those, you know, kind of were the final idea, the final result of expression of this project and this experience. Anything else you want to say about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that when we were discussing it, like, you know, how we ultimately were going to do like a virtual collaboration, or like a collaboration without physically being in the same space together. One of the ways that we were talking that I really enjoyed was this idea of like building a library of marks, and kind of having like almost like building a language, but ultimately to me, it felt more kind of like a library or an archive. Mm-hmm. And then as we were, you know, translating all of that into the three final pieces, it kind of felt like I could access my own archive of mm-hmm. like those. I think we had made the more preliminary drawings or preliminary pieces were 9x12. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could reference those 9x12 pieces like of my own. And then I could also reference yours too. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like a cool way of kind of collaborating, you know, with the restriction of not being like literally in a studio together. So yes. I kind of enjoyed that because I almost kind of felt like as I was making my three final pieces, like I was kind of taking on your hand a mm-hmm. bit and like trying to like imitate and like walk how you were walking and move how you were moving. And I just really enjoyed that because it was, you know, it brought a lot of connection and kind of felt like, you know, you're embodying this idea of maternal ambivalence that goes beyond just what you're thinking for yourself. You know,
yeah, that like kind of collaborative experience of, oh, like this is what Kaylin's day might have looked or felt like, and reflecting mm-hmm. on that as you're like working in the studio, and you know, just that idea of like not feeling as alone sort of in your mm-hmm. journey. I love the way you reference like the visual sort of library, and yeah, and we kind of shared our pieces that were in progress through just like texting and Marco Polo, and you know, a couple phone calls and stuff, just like keeping track of each other's progress throughout mm-hmm. the project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that we pretty quickly realized that both of us were like, we quickly realized how similar it actually was. Like, I mm-hmm. think only a couple weeks into it, we both realized that, like, we couldn't just make one mark. Like, when mm-hmm. we were in the very first stage of, like, journaling and just kind of, like, trying to get out what the emotion was for that day before going on to the 9x12 drawings. Like, when we were in that journaling stage, I think we both were texting, like, I can't make just one mark. Like,
no,
I didn't have just one emotion today. I had like this whole spectrum of emotions within one day. And yes. that very quickly was like, okay, I gotta like, you make a proposal so academically,
right?
And then you start to execute it. And it's like, oh my gosh, okay, this is like way more layers to this than even I was anticipating. And I'm the one that made the proposal.
I know. And I do think that was one of sort of the biggest things that I learned sort of about my maternal experience, is that like it's so complex, right? Like yeah. every yeah. day is just up and down and up and down and up and down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that a little bit more.
I'm thrilled to partner with our new sponsor, Cozy, to tell you more about this incredible app. Cozy is an app that specializes in keeping busy families organized. It's an app designed for multiple users to help you and your spouse, partner, or caretakers juggle school schedules, practices, meetings, doctor's appointments, and more. Cozy tracks everyone's schedules and events in one place with a shared color-coded calendar. A feature I love is the app reminds others about your family's events so that you don't have to be the one who does that. It's easy to get started. You can even pull in events from your family's existing personal work and school calendars. You can have Cozy send everyone in your family a weekly or a daily email that shares your agenda. And I personally love the meal planning section. You can create a shared grocery list that lets the whole family add items in real time. So you'll never find yourself at the store without the list. Not that that's happened to you, but it's happened with me before. That list is always on your phone and it's up to date. If you need help figuring out dinner, there's even a place to store recipes and plan meals ahead. The best part? Cozy is free. Just download Cozy, C-O-Z-I, the Family Organizer app from your app store. That's Cozy, C-O-Z-I, and get the free app today. Visit your phone's app store or Google Play to download Cozy today. Start feeling more organized and keep your family communications simple this season. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast.
So, Lee, can you share, like, just practically, how did this project go for us as we sort of changed course? And do you feel like for you, it met your expectations, or was it different than what you expected? And, you know, just wondering your thoughts on like the outcome and where we are now that we're almost done with the project.
So the very first thing that comes to my mind is actually when you were referencing our proposal in the introduction, and you know, it says that you and I will create a collaborative project that responds to the theme of maternal ambivalence, in part as a response to the books, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the two books that we were responding to. And I have to confess that whenever I read that in other artists' proposals, or whenever I just hear people saying, like, I'm responding to X, Y, or Z, this article or this essay or something else that's in other existence in the world and, you know, part of the art industry, I always in myself, I feel so bad. And I'm just kind of like, who the hell has time to do that? I don't have time to reference this academic paper. I really want to reference that academic paper, but I can't. And like, I really want to sit down and, you know, refresh my mind on art history and remember the compositions of the master painters,
right?
Redo my art history classes, like in my, you know, I would love for all of that stuff to be super fresh at the at the top of my mind when I'm building any piece that I'm building, you know? And so I just think it's so funny that you and I, we did that. And I just have to confess to everybody, I read two chapters of the book. Like, I just failed in that regard. Like, I think I could maybe even include the preface as something that I was able to read, you know? And I just wanted to like lay that out there, because I think that it sounds so impressive when you're writing these proposals and you sound so pulled together. And then even like you're making a podcast about it and everybody listening. And we all have that, the imposter syndrome, and we all have that feeling of like, oh man, when I get up to the ladder of being on a podcast, like, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just kind of this, like this misnomer. It's just a misconceived idea that somehow somebody has more time than you do. And so that was definitely something that like my expectations, I think that I even, you know, texted you and was like, I am not succeeding in this regard, you know, and that I, you know, I just did not meet that expectation, but I am happy that we set it. You know, I am happy that I bought the book in order to do this project. I, you know, I'm still thankful that I read the preface and like, I got as far as I got, you know? And then like the other, I think the other things that, you know, changed my expectation was really, you know, just trying in myself to be the best that I could at kind of like rolling with the punches a bit, since I was going to be having a baby in the middle of this project. You know, I think that it's important for our own mental health to, like, not necessarily, I hate saying like set the bar real low, you know, because that also builds like a very wrong idea of the ladder and, you know, who capability and who's accomplishing more and who's not. Like, it just, that's just also a bad mentality. But I think that, you know, to praise anything that you did get done is like a better way of thinking about it. Like, hey, I got this one 9x12 done, and I'm really proud of that, because that little 9x12 is a complete expression of what I had going on today, you know? But then as well, like, I needed to be okay with like, wow, I didn't do anything for like a month, the entire, you know, in the middle of this project. And that doesn't mean that the project is dropped. It doesn't mean that I'm not like meeting whatever, like the standard was that I was trying to set, you know, like, I just think it's like, it's interesting tension to have a standard of excellence for yourself, but then also not to feel like a failure when you don't meet that standard. You know, you can't, You can't not set the standard. It's important to set the standard, but then also don't beat yourself up if you like don't meet that standard. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of a funny introspective kind of like tension you have to deal with. So I think it was interesting. On my end, I realized that I had like a huge push right before our daughter was born. And then like, I had nothing. Mm-hmm. And then like, it came back, you know, a little bit, and then I had nothing again. Mm-hmm. And then like our initial deadline for ourselves, like started to come close. And I was excited actually to kind of like feel the fire a bit, like, mm-hmm. I gotta get this done. Okay, cool. Like, you know, I kind of love the rush of like setting up the home studio super fast and like just getting it done and like pushing and pushing. And I'm not overthinking my work, you know, mm-hmm. but then, you know, we also decided like, hey, we don't need to be feeling this pressure quite so hot. So mm-hmm. maybe let's like step back from the fire just a little bit.
Right.
You know, it was just interesting to drive this, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Just responding to everything you said, I definitely did not sort of meet my standard or the standard that we originally set for the project. I think the hardest thing for me was, funny enough, it was like the journaling, actually, which I would have liked to have committed to that a little bit more, because I think it would just, I wish I journaled more in general about my life. Like I would love a more written, like, you know, reflection of kind of what my days look like.
Oh, and I have to butt in right there, because I wish I had the book. I should have grabbed the book before we sat down. But in one of the books that we were referencing, Mother is a Verb, Sarah Knott, she says that in her introduction. She
See, look at you. Good thing you read that introduction.
Good thing I read that introduction.
You got that
always,
far.
Always read the introduction. Then you can reference it in the podcast. But
so she says, like,
she does. Because she is a writer. She has, you know, written, you know, academic papers. And so she says that, like, as, you know, the historical things that she has referenced, like, there's always a plethora of documentation that she can go about and she can research and she can mull through and everything in order to come to the conclusions that she's writing into her book. And then she went to write this book on motherhood, and she was like, she called it piecemeal. She was like the documentation of it is just not out there. And then she just made this very interesting evaluation that it was almost kind of like the very thing that we were trying to write about is also the very thing that's interrupting us and our ability to write about it.
Yep.
You know, and it's exactly what you're saying right now. It's just kind of like, I wish I could document this, but it's just this very real irony. I actually don't think that there is a stronger essence of irony.
Yeah, I know. And it's interesting because I think just for my own personal, I don't know, not that I ever really go back and read like journals or look at yearbooks or stuff like that very often. What do you do that? Like once a year, you know, but
once a year, I'm thinking like once every 5 years.
Yeah. Like some, you know, like you dust off the box and whatever, like look at your, I don't know. I'm not like good about stuff like that. I'm not a very sentimental, let's keep all the old stuff. And, you know, and that's the reason is because I feel like I never take the time to actually reflect on that stuff. I do with like, you know, kind of more personal, like business, like I try to be like, okay, what was the goals that I set in 2021 and kind of where am I, but that feels more connected to like shorter term, like real time rather than, you know, kind of like looking back at something from 5 years ago. But anyway, I wish I was a little more diligent with the journaling, because I think when I had like creative blocks, when it came to the making the big paintings and I was like, I just don't know. Like I'm second guessing myself, like with the compositions and things, I think it would have been nice to have more journaling to just kind of sit with and, you know, reflect and really try to think through like what has been my experience. Like what it's interesting though, because of course, like you're saying, I'm literally living the experience in the right, moment right. that I'm trying to make these paintings. So
right, right.
it's like this juxtaposition of, you know, I'm referencing my maternal experience throughout the summer, but also like I'm living it right now. So I can just like, right. you know, kind of in a more real time gestural way can like process, you know, kind of process my world right there. But I would say that that was one thing that I don't know. It's like, I just remember, and when we were doing the bulk of the journaling, it was like in summer. So, mm-hmm. you know, like all of my kids were with me all day, oh, like, you know, and you kind of get in bed at night and you're just like,
right.
Ugh. Like, I don't want to think about how my day went because I just want to like numb out and
I don't actually want to record how my day was.
No.
Like. Right. Well, I think it's funny because I'm also thinking back to like how you and I were texting back and forth and, you know, you were confessing a bit of that. And then it actually made me feel better as well because I had reduced it down to like, I'm not even going to write words. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to like make a mark. Mm-hmm. And then like we were saying earlier, we realized like we couldn't just make one mark. So I started like layering marks mm-hmm. and I spent literally 3 minutes doing mm-hmm. it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, like as long as it's just like getting something out, that's great. But also like, it was just, I think that there was like a beauty within the camaraderie a mm-hmm. bit, like just kind of being really open and honest with each other. Like, hey, I'm just not doing this.
Yeah.
I just don't have the strength today. And then like, you know, texting back and being like, I didn't have it yesterday. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird because I feel like there were a lot of moments of that where we could have like not shared, or we could have like kept sort of the silent expectation of, well, I know Lee's doing her part, so I'm just like failing over here.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also do feel like the accountability of being in a collaborative, you know, project together did maybe keep me more focused on like, mm-hmm. you know, the project overall, whereas maybe if it was just my own thing, I would have been like, I'm not really feeling this anymore. I'm just going to move on. Or,
right.
Yeah. You know, I think there is kind of something to that structure that
right
is nice. And, you know, we're going to have 6, you know, large pieces that are completed, and hopefully we'll, you know, be able to get in some exhibitions or something down the road with.
You know, so. I think that it takes a lot of self-awareness to really know kind of which type of person you are, like how you're saying, you know, one type of person might kind of need like the structure of a collaboration, kind of like that accountability partner, or, you know, somebody that is not on your, like on your back, but is kind of on your back, like, you know, and then another type of person is somebody that can be very self-driven and, you know, can be in the studio and just clocking those hours steadily themselves. And, but I think that what's funny is that oftentimes we think we should be the other one. We're never fully, you know, satisfied with being which one we are. You know, the self-driven person is always like, maybe I should do more collaborations, like blah, blah, blah. And, you know, then they get kind of bummed out when they try a collaboration because it doesn't really go very well and they just want to do it themselves. And, you know, and then vice versa. Like the collaboration person is like, you know, I should be more self-driven and I should just do this. But then they're feeling really lonely in their studio as they're trying to, or as you just said, I think it's a very real feeling to kind of just drop it when, you know, you don't have the strength yourself, which so many of us feel that's the type of person that I am too. Mm-hmm. So I think we didn't even really know that we are the same type of person in that regard mm-hmm. when we started this collaboration. So I think it was really healthy for both of us to find out, oh, she's struggling with the same things I'm struggling with. Okay, mm-hmm. well, I'm just going to open up about that now. And right. then we can kind of get each other back on track a bit. And we can remember that this collaboration is a really great, like, accountability thing and keeping us focused and et cetera, you know?
Yeah. And I think the project overall was flexible enough that, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't time bound in the sense mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. you know, we did literally have to clock in and out every day or,
right.
I don't know, like I had to send something to you and then you had to send something back to me. You know, those kind of collaborations where you're literally waiting on the other person mm-hmm. to complete part of it. Like, you know, it was nice to have it be loose enough that, you know, there was room for us to kind of let the project ebb and flow. Okay, so let's talk more about the conceptual side of the project. I want to hear what your definition of maternal ambivalence is. And, you know, just kind of, I think we can talk about why we decided to make this sort of the anchor mm-hmm. or the theme for this project.
Mm-hmm. Maternal ambivalence, we've said 1,000 times, is such a big topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to talk about it at the level, you know, that psychiatrists can talk about it, and to talk about it at the level that, you know, friends, you know, girlfriends can talk about it. Right. And just kind of like that childhood friend, you know, just calling her up, kind of, you know, casualness, as well as, you know, the bigger kind of more scientific thing. And so I guess I say that because I do want to give a caveat of just that, like, we're aware that this is a very, very big thing, and that this is, you know, something that, like, you could talk to your therapist about, and something mm-hmm. that maybe I will talk to my therapist about,
yes.
you know, like that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, it's not, you know, you shouldn't shy away from the feeling either, just because it's like a hot thing.
And I'll say too, Lee, that I think maternal ambivalence has, like, I feel like you and I are going to be talking about this in sort of a neutral territory mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. I actually feel like it's a topic that can go very, very deep for people.
Yeah,
and, yeah. you know, for me, like, I have not had as much, you know, like, I have not had as much depression associated with my maternal experience or postpartum, you know, depression or like physical ailments or health impairments because of my maternal experience, like so many people in our community, so many friends of mine have had. And so I just want to put that out there that I think if you hear us talking about this topic and you feel seen and validated, but also you might be experiencing a more extreme side or a more extreme experience of this, like, that definitely professional help is probably necessary for you. And I know I personally have not utilized therapy yet, but I'm hoping to down the road. But I just wanted to say that, like, this is like a very serious, you know, thing that is very connected to maternal, like, deep rooted maternal joy and deep maternal pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so like whatever kind of side of that spectrum you are on in this season, I think it's just appropriate that you seek support for mm-hmm. that, you know, whatever you're feeling.
Yeah. And I think that support as well has a huge spectrum, you know, mm-hmm. like, I think that what, I think that all of these feelings are so complicated because they can be experienced on a spectrum. And for some reason, there's, you know, there's shame and embarrassment at each point on the spectrum, you know, like somebody who's on the lighter, you know, side of the spectrum and, you know, maybe is experiencing some baby blues and everything, but is still quite surprised by the baby blues. You know, maybe nobody in their community has ever really even talked about the baby blues. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of like, you know, what is this kind of thing? You know, they might kind of think in themselves, you know, oh, well, you know, no, it's just the baby blues. I shouldn't go and like, I don't need to like, you know, harp on somebody and mm-hmm. talk about this. And, you know, it's not as intense as postpartum depression. And they kind of shut themselves down along the way, mm-hmm. you know. And then there's also shame and embarrassment for some reason at the other end of the spectrum too. Like for some reason, we just never want to speak up.
Right.
You know? And so I think that ultimately, like, you know, yeah, in this conversation, you know, we're going to be taking kind of a middle road, mm-hmm. a neutral road, but also trying to, you know, validate kind of both sides of the spectrum. Like, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, hey, we're all, you know, we're all ultimately together in this, you know, yeah. we might not be in the same boat, but that's okay. It's mm-hmm. okay for your boat to exist next to mine. You don't need to come into my boat. I don't need to go into yours, but ultimately it's really, really nice if
we're in the same, you know, water.
Exactly. Right? We can kind of bob in the water together.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of thing, you know? So I think that overall, because I even say in my artist statement that I address this pretty much like in all of my work. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, what I mean by that in my artist statement is I mainly just want to, I want to tackle the tension that mm-hmm. is felt within motherhood. And, you know, how, if you think about it physically, it's, you literally blow up, you literally get huge, and then you deflate. Mm-hmm. And that was so bizarre after my first daughter was born. Mm-hmm. Like it was just kind of like, and all of a sudden the baseball came out and now I'm just deflating. Like mm-hmm. This is very, very weird, you know? And so there's a tension between like, you know, the physical kind of what's going on. And then there is this emotional tension of kind mm-hmm. of like, I'm very, very thrilled for this. This is also astronomically harder than I was expecting. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that it's really funny. I have a lot of friends who have recently become first time moms and they are all saying the same things of like, you know, motherhood is every emotion across the spectrum, you know, mm-hmm. but I do think that ambivalence is like kind of unique in the sense that to me it doesn't feel as straightforward, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like I think that, you know, postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, I had a bit of postpartum anxiety after our son was born. And I kind of feel like it's a bit more often talked about, and as well at least for me, it felt easier to find the place to put the pin, essentially. Like as mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, you know, talking to different people, they're like, you know, do you feel this or do you feel this? And I'm like, yes to that, no to that. It's mm-hmm. kind of a much, for me, it was a much more easily definable thing, you know? Whereas ambivalence is kind of really just this world of opposites mm-hmm. is what it feels to me. Like, you know, I often talk in different writings, you know, if I'm writing for Milked, my art publication, or if I'm just writing more proposals or even just writing notes for myself, like I talk about like a tearing tension mm-hmm. and a very like cozy comfort, mm. like existing literally right next to each other. And how sometimes that coexistence of those two feelings like makes you mentally feel exhausted mm-hmm. and it makes you kind of question your mentality actually, mm-hmm. which, you know, isn't, in my opinion, isn't a bad thing, right. But I think that our culture makes it feel like a bad thing, you know? Yeah. I think that our contemporary culture expects mothers to already be complete beings mm-hmm. for some reason. and like thinks that we've already wrestled through all of this stuff related to our humanity, that we've got it all figured out, and therefore we're raising other humans because we've got it all figured out. Like, it's just like this really weird unspoken expectation that we're already complete beings, you know, which is so wrong, obviously, like a wrong perception, but then also wrong to put that expectation on somebody. To wrestle with ambivalence is really just to wrestle with your humanity. And for some reason, that wrestling scares people. And I think that it also scares people because nobody is talking about it. We no longer have like it just feels, I mean, at least to me, it feels like the idea of the village has kind of like dissipated a little bit. I don't want to blame it completely on that, but it just kind of seems like people are quiet these days. And so I think that like, I like to wrestle with it in my work on a two-part basis. Number one, to help myself wrestle with it, like to process it in my work. And my work is very autobiographical. And so it's like, I am wrestling with this as I'm making my work. Like, I want to talk about the fact that like, I am saying like daily prayers to manage like my anger. Like, I'm saying daily prayers to like, I don't 100% know how to articulate that, but essentially like I'm trying to lead an aesthetic life, which means that I am simultaneously dying to myself at the same time as like finding myself. And as well, like, it's just kind of figuring out like what that walk looks like, you know? And so I feel like ultimately it starts to go down like all these different webs, because sometimes, you know, sometimes that takes on a very theological type of conversation. And then other times it takes on actually a very lighthearted, humorous, like, I'm just going to like draw, like, you know, the giant, you know, the one of my pieces, like the giant dumped pile of Legos that like had like a simultaneous, like deafening sound to me, as well as like a comfort sound to me. Like, everybody has stepped on that damn Lego as like they're trying to get water in the middle of the night. And like, but then at the same time, like, I heard that sound in the middle of the pandemic and I was like, wow, that's a universal sound that all of us can relate to. And we all know what that sound sounds like, that clanging plastic, you know? And so it brought comfort at the same time. And so I just think that like ambivalence can be talked about at all levels, you know? And it's not, in my eyes, it's actually not an innately bad thing. And I think that I kind of wanted to, I was excited to like, you know, wrestle with this with you. You know, in order to get somebody else's perspective, but also to just kind of like talk it out more.
I think,
in that's one a lot. Of the, I just said a lot.
No, it's okay. There's like a lot to unpack there, but, I think in the, one of the books, they talk about maternal ambivalence as a literal conflicting of needs where, you know, your needs as a person, as a human, are constantly in, you know, tension with the needs that your children have. And it's kind of like, whose mouth do you feed, right? I know I experience that every day, every every hour. Like, and so like, are there ways that I can find where we're both being fed, right, at the same time? Is there, you know, to sort of use like the religious language that you reference, like a dying to self, where there are moments where I literally have to starve to just get through so that my kids can be where they need to be. And then I just kind of trust that there will be time to like fill that cup, later on. And that's like a really hard thing to do, you know, to kind of live in the tension of, and I don't want to make it out to sound like mothers are all or should be self-sacrificing, because I don't want this conversation to like glorify that. I actually, anybody who knows me, you know, on a more personal level knows that I'm pretty good about asking for what I need and making sure that like we have a structure where I am not just, you know, like becoming invisible to my family. But I mean, there, it is literally real time choices that you make, you know, like I have this kid screaming at me, but I really want to finish this thing or do this thing, or, you know, everything within me says that I need space and quiet right now, but I can't get that. Like it's not accessible. And so, like you said, that word tension really is kind of at the top for me when thinking about this. It's like the, you know, the conflict of needs, and then also just the conflict of feelings, like knowing that, I mean, I literally hate my kids sometimes, but I also love them at the same, like, who else do you do that with? You know, like with other people, you kind of have this permission to, you know, not have so much attachment with your feelings, right? You're just gonna, like, you decide you're gonna hate somebody, you're gonna hate them. Like, you know, hate is a bad example, but, you know, like I'm just like really disappointed or angry at this person or whatever, because I don't have as much attachment or investment in them. Whereas when it's your kids, I don't know, like having those feelings is so complicated. It's hard to just kind of have the feeling and let it go. And then, you know, because it's, they're just like constantly there too, you know?
I mean, I think to use a word that we said before, like, I think that it just takes an immense amount of self-awareness, you know, and like an immense amount of like, to me, that self-awareness is connected to boundaries. And I am still hugely learning boundaries. My husband actually has a much better understanding of boundaries than I do, I will confess. And so a lot of the times, I mean, this is a privilege of having a significant other, is kind of like using them as a sounding board, essentially, which I know that some people don't have. And so, you know, whoever it could kind of be for you, whether, you know, whether it's a best friend, or whether it's like your own mother, or whether it's, you know, your own father, or you're kind of like whoever.
Daycare.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah. Maybe not the sounding board, but the literal boundary. Like,
Right. You know? Oh yeah. I hear what you're saying. And I think that it, like, sometimes I get really pissed off though, at the same time, when people are like, you just need more boundaries. Like, you know, like, it's just kind of like, I mean, I say that myself, but, you know, when I realistically think about my daily experience, like, I have a 10-week-old, a 2.5-year-old, and a 4-year-old. Like, excuse my language, but there ain't no fucking boundaries. Like, I am their, I am for all three of them. I am their bodily comfort. I am their, I just, I am for them, like, kind of thing, you know? So if for so long as the mother, like, those boundaries are so vague and so wishy-washy, you know? And like, sometimes, like, I think that, you know, really really all that you can do is take the 5 minutes in the bathroom to yourself to try and take a deep breath, you know, or like I have taught my kids that like if they need to ask for space, they can ask for space. But hey, guess what? Mommy needs space too. Mm-hmm. So I tell them, don't come into the bathroom with me because I need space. And they're like, but you don't get space. And I'm like, that's not true. Mm-hmm. I do get space. I talk to my kids like adults. Like I need space because I need to reset my heart. I am grumpy right now. Like I am having a lot of emotions. I am mm-hmm. frustrated. I am irritable. I am yelling at you too much. Mm-hmm. And I need to go upstairs. You know, we have like what we call the prayer chair, mm-hmm. where we like ask them to sit if they need to like take a deep breath and all that kind of stuff. And I have literally told them, mommy needs to go and sit in the prayer chair. Like I need to go and have Absolutely. A moment and like, and do this. And I think that actually them seeing me do that for myself actually teaches them that they can do that for themselves. Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Mindy Whittock with the Artist Mother team. I wanted to take a moment to share about our Artist Mother Network. You have listened to the podcast and maybe follow along on Instagram, finding support and validation as an artist mother on these platforms. We have a space that offers a more personal experience in the Artist Mother community. Come join our Artist Mother Network, a place where more tangible friendships are created and resources for you as an artist and a mother are abundant. On the network, you will find groups to support your interests, like the Single Mothers Group. Through these subsets, I have personally found forever friends and strength in the wisdom and support of other women. Our network offers free artist talks on so many different topics. Jody Hayes recently gave us a tour of her studio and how she keeps her art life organized. We also have one workshop by an artist a month, offered to you for free with your membership. Tara Carpenter Estrada just walked our members through a trace monotype printing workshop that was so fun. All of our workshops and artist talks are recorded and saved on the network, so you can access them if you aren't able to attend live. I also co-host the morning show with Kaylin Butine. We start Monday mornings in community with you talking about topics deeply relatable in our artist mother identities. We have recently discussed how we can be fearless in our studios, what bravery looks like as an artist, and have shared in vulnerability and what makes us afraid. These morning shows are the best way to start the week. Please don't miss out on this opportunity to connect with us on a deeper level. Our network offers an affordable membership of $11 a month or $121 a year, and your first 2 months are free. This gives you access to our artist talks, workshops, morning show, exhibition opportunities, a growing resource library for artist mothers, and many support groups with other network members based on location and interests. The network also provides you the opportunity to take part in our leadership training so that you may become an artist mother community host in your own geographical area. The network has been such a wonderful source of friendship, community, and artist resources. I am so proud to be part of this artist mother world and am grateful I get to share it with you. I look forward to getting to know your magical self. I will see you on the network. You can find all the information you need to join on our website at artistmotherpodcast.com.
I think maybe we could wrap it up by just talking about our, like kind of bringing it back to the art and the work that we're making for this project. And I just want to hear about your, like, do you work well when you have a project kind of proposed and then you try to fit work within that? Yeah, it's hard. I think it like it's sounds like, better than you think it's gonna sound.
Yes, 100%.
Like you're like, oh yeah, this will be great to like come up with this idea and make these constraints and then, you know, just like do this thing and, mm-hmm. and we'll have this structure and it'll be
right,
you know. But then it's really hard to make work about a topic that you, I don't know. Like, I would rather just make the work and then decide what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that it is, for me, it does so often go back to that one quote from Sarah Knott the author of Mother is a Verb about saying that like the very thing we're trying to document is what is interrupting us and almost preventing us from documenting it. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, it's like, I really struggle with like having an idea and wanting to execute it and just not being able to, you know? And then like sometimes the idea fades, but then also like so much has happened like since I initially got the idea, and I feel like so much happened since we initially proposed the project that it just kind of is like, how do I tackle this? Like, how this started as just kind of like one small idea. And now it's like, you know, just like so much has changed and so much has happened. And it kind of feels like this huge pressure to try and integrate everything, you know? And I think as well, when you try and really, you know, when you try and like pick that one topic, like we picked maternal ambivalence, I think it's so funny how so many people would, you know, say like, I never would have thought this about you kind of thing. Like I instantly get imposter syndrome, like setting in, and like instantly have the feeling of like, who am I? Oh my goodness, who am I to like speak to like such a broad topic, but also like everybody has a mother. Everybody, like, I mean, this is like something that we're all related to, whether or not we are a mother, like ourselves or not, you know? And then other is, but 1,000 different types of mothers, and like, and so it just feels very, very daunting. And like, I actually struggle with doubt a lot. Like, I'm even doubting everything I've said on this podcast. Like, it's just like, you know, it's just a struggle, you know? Right. So I feel like it's so funny how, yeah, you think that like, by outlining a project, I'm going to stick, it's going to pave the way, you know, and I'm going to be able to fulfill this. And then it's like, whether you've paved the way or not, like that doubt still comes in. The imposter syndrome still comes in. It feels super daunting. You question your ability. And then stupid social media. You then see another mother who nails it.
Right.
And you're like, man, I should have thought of doing it like that. Like, that was so poignant. And like, oh, it was that one liner that we just needed to hear, you know? And so then you got to encourage yourself. Like, okay, I have a voice. I have a voice. My voice is unique to my story. Like,
we should just like go to accounting or something, Lee. I don't know. Like, why are we artists?
I've literally thought about quitting every single day. I'm just like, I'm done. I'm just gonna like, when you interviewed those mothers that ended up taking a break.
Oh yeah.
And I was Meredith, like, I gotta listen to that. I still haven't listened to it because I haven't had the time, but I'm like, I think about that so often, you know? And so I think that I'm with you. I think that it's going to provide like a lot of goodness. And then it usually gives me anxiety. And then I usually kick into gear somehow and do it. But I've also, for me, I've just been on a super huge like self-awareness kick. And I have actually learned about myself that I'm not a starter at all. Actually, I'm a huge finisher. And it's the opposite of what a lot of people say. A lot of people say like, oh, I love starting things and I just never finish. And I'm so the opposite. Like I have to like climb a freaking mountain in order to start a project, you know? So in that regard, it was nice to like do this with you and to have that accountability partner and like have the concept like set. And I kind of could like, it felt like it kind of kickstarted me like a little bit already. I didn't have to kickstart myself, but then I still like procrastinated like crazy because I just can't ever start things. And then like finally, for some reason, it's usually when, which you can tell me if you can relate to this, like it's usually when you just stop thinking about it. It's like, I'm just, you know, you literally just ask yourself like, what was today?
Right.
Like, what did today feel like? Okay. You know, like in essence, that's what we were trying to document from the beginning.
Right.
Is like, this is what I felt today. So, I mean, to give a little sneak peek at one of the pieces, like I have been in a season where, I mean, I literally have gone to my father confessor about this. Like, I am so frustrated with my son. So frustrated with him, you know? And it's just like,
he's three, right?
He's almost three. And he is, he acts like
we're on the struggle bus with our 3-year-old too.
Yeah. So. Yes. It's, he acts like his older sister's twin, because she's four and a half. Mm-hmm. And he thinks he's so much more capable than he is. He wants to do everything that she wants to, but he's got this will. Oh my goodness. And I was talking to Father Joshua, and he's got 9 children. So you can only imagine the advice that he gives me. And he was just like, you know what? Some kids, they use their will as their tool, like for a long time. And then just somehow eventually, 1 month, he'll just finally realize that it's a tool in his pocket, not the tool, right? You know? And I'm just like, oh, but can that month be now? I hate this. Like, it drives me up the wall. Like, my daughter just did not drive me up the wall in the way that my son does. And so one day I'm trying to wrap up these drawings for this project, and he was just effing pissing me off. And he's like obsessed with his cars. And I was just like, fine, whatever. I'm going to take your cars. I'm going to spill them on the floor. I'm going to take a picture of them. And I'm just going to like draw these. Like, I'm so mad at you. And like, but at the same time, this is what, like, you know, that neutral level of ambivalence feels like to me. Like, at the same time as feeling all of those, there's this stupid voice in the back of my head that's like, I love that you're obsessed with trucks.
Right.
Like, I love that you take literally what he calls his Momo, and it's his little monster truck. It's this teeny little thing, and he just zooms it around the house for like an hour. He loves it, and he's zooming and he's zooming and he's zooming, and he's like so confident, and he's like so driven, and he's so focused. And I'm like, dude, I wish I had that. I wish I had your focus. Yeah. And he's also just so present, like just so in the moment. And I'm like, oh, dude, like, how are you so there?
Right.
You're so in that moment. And so I was like, I'm going to steal your moment. Yeah. And I literally just like took all of his trucks and dumped them. And I was like, I'm going to do what you do. And I'm just going to like draw this car crash of toys. Like literally a car crash of toys, and like, you know, and like see what like comes out of it. And then like, and then there's this discipline in my realism.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is I think there's this tension even within your work, because knowing that you're like drawing this out of a frustration, but then you work so like delicately, and you know, there's this sort of care that you put into your drawings that's like very evident. So
Well, thank you. And not to like, I don't want to sound cocky, but that's actually the point.
It's
something that I'm like, it's actually me trying to like I don't want to say like just self-discipline myself, but it's like, I'm trying to hone myself.
Yeah.
Like, it's like have like somewhat of like self-control, and just like, it's like you have that moment where you're about to like explode on your kid, and to actually have like a brief moment of clarity where you're just kind of like, no, I'm like not going to. Okay. I am actually just going to say, Lord have mercy. Like, okay. And just like take the breath. And so it's like to take all this like huge bundle of emotion and then to slowly draw. It just is like, can I do this? Like, you know, but it's just kind of like to actually malleably like take that and do that. Like, it's just physically what I need to physically manifest.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I am starting to just like scratch at the surface, but I'm doing that actually for a different reason. I'm not scratching at the surface because of emotion. Mm-hmm. I'm actually delicately drawing because of my raging emotion.
Right.
But with like, do you feel any of that? Like in the three pieces that you made, like, did you do that? Like in your own kind of way, like deal with the ambivalence as you were making them?
Yeah. I mean, I actually think I approached it in a different way, in which there was less like tension between the actual way that I make the work. Like for you, I feel like you're kind of capturing this chaotic moment or scene, but you're doing it through this like hyper-realistic, careful, delicate, you know, drawing. And I feel like my response is more authentically trying to connect with, you know, the movement and the gesture of the emotion or the experience. So, which is why I think we made for an interesting collaboration, because, you know, especially when I paint large, like it's just much more gestural. Like there's more kind of attention to the wider composition of the piece rather than like, you know, these like very tiny details or things that are kind of holding you in. Like, so I don't know. It's, but to go back to the original question, like I also like really struggle with, okay, I have to make three paintings about maternal ambivalence. Like it is really hard for me to work in that space because I have, you know, these expectations. I don't know what the work is going to look like, but I have these expectations of what I want the work to do. And then that expectation kind of just makes it really challenging to execute because of what you shared about just feeling those cycles of doubt and not wanting to, I don't know, like not, I guess having a little bit of a perfectionistic tendency, like wanting things to be clear and communicate the ideas. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever feel the pressure to, do you ever feel the pressure to like connect to everybody? You know, like, I feel like there was this pressure, like, to pick such a big topic that has such a large spectrum that you know that pretty much everybody, you know, can relate to, whether they're listening to this silently and just kind of thinking to themselves, or whether they're, like, openly talking about it with, like, their whole family, you know, or talking about it with their therapist or just, you know, whatever level, you know, like, everybody can kind of relate to a different degree. Do you ever feel the pressure that you have to like speak to every single person with your work?
I don't know. I guess I more feel the pressure to like accurately represent my own experience. And I don't feel like I often do that in the way that I want to, and like that can feel disappointing because it's like if I can't even authentically, you know, make what I want to make that feels sort of connected to my own experience, then how would anybody connect with it, you know?
Yeah, interesting.
It's kind of like a backwards way of
right
or like a reframing of what you said. And I do feel like there is sort of a language within abstraction that maybe because it's like less referential to something specific, like a pile of kids' car toys that you so eloquently draw, like maybe there's like a more flexible entry point for reading abstraction, or like a more understood value of sort of creating your own meaning within the work, that I think is maybe a little bit easier than creating hyper-realistic drawings that you know the meaning is already there and it's like kind of loaded for people, right? So I don't know. I don't know if that's because we work so differently that I guess I would answer like I don't think about that as much.
Yeah.
But I also already feel like my work is just not going to speak to everyone because I'm specifically making work about my maternal experience. At least right now I am. And, you know, like the people who mostly want my work in their home are people who have like a similar autobiographical experience as me because that's what I reference when I make my work. Right. So, yeah, that's interesting to think about though.
Yeah. I don't know why that question popped into my brain, but it's just, it's something that I think about often and bounce between kind of like, you know, making something super autobiographical, but then also kind of, I guess, just wondering like, is anybody going to relate to this? Or like, you know, is anybody going to understand this? Or, you know, it's kind of like just like a funny, like hands closed and hands open kind of feeling, you know? And so
I feel like that, I almost feel like that to attempt to do that is so overwhelming to me that I'm more just like trying to please myself with the work that I make. And I'm like, I can't even do that half the time. So I surely can't, you know, please everybody else. But that's kind of the, that's kind of where I am right now. Like, I just want to make work that I'm really proud of and that feels true and authentic to me. And I don't know. We'll see what comes out of it. Right.
Well, I think that that's what was, also what was cool. Going back to the project, what was cool about proposing it to each other was like, let's just document what this feels like to us daily. Let's then like send each other pictures of each other's marks. Then let's like make these three pieces. And then ultimately it's cool to partner with somebody who does work so differently than, than you do. And then allow like the six pieces together to ultimately have a very, you know, broad sweeping conversation together, you know, like I kind of feel like it's like, you know, you that you put these six pieces together and you end up making a big brushstroke of like opposites together, addressing the topic in different regards, but then also kind of similarly relating to each other as we like use each other's vocabulary and like, you know, reference each other's opposite experience of like you residency away, me residency at home, you abstraction, me realism. You know, like that, like, I think it was interesting to set up the project in a way that almost kind of like the framework of the project is opposites. And the, you know, ambivalence is kind of, you know, opposite.
Yeah. It's like already there in the language of what we make. Let's wrap up by just sharing any thoughts or advice for anyone wanting to take on a collaboration. Like just what would you say to somebody who was like, you know, how can I like, I don't know, what are some ways to approach a collaboration to make sure that it's, I don't know, going to be successful? I don't like that term, but you know what I mean?
To go smoothly, but maybe it shouldn't go smoothly. I guess I think that what was, at least I'll just say what was helpful was that you and I were pretty open about our expectations. Mm-hmm. And that you and I were pretty open about how we work, you know, mm-hmm. like, I think we learned pretty quickly that we actually, we plan differently and mm-hmm. we work very differently. Like not only just work, like the aesthetic of our artwork, but like just kind of the way that we execute projects, is quite different.
Yeah.
And I think it was really helpful that like one time you sent me a text and you were just like, this way of working is not working for me. I need to like, mm-hmm. this is how I need to work. I kind of need like more specific questions, I think you wanted at the, mm-hmm. at the beginning. And then realizing kind of like what flexibility you yourself could have, like I was totally cool with like, oh, sweet. Okay. I can work like that. Like, right. You know, it's not like my go-to way of working, but I can work that way. So then having like a layer of flexibility to kind of like lean your way a little bit, like when you need it, and then you leaning my way a little right. bit, like we've extended the deadline a bit because you're like, Lee, you know, do you need more time? And it's like, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
More time.
Right. I think it's just like,
I'm trying to make it all about you, but it's not me.
Right. But I just think that openness of articulating expectations and the openness mm-hmm. of saying like, this is how I am, and you know, having flexibility but also not being shy to ask for some, it's just the give and take of
right.
collaboration and being open to that is what I say. What would you say?
Yeah, I was gonna say definitely like honest communication and I don't know, maybe like just letting things simmer and sit for a while. Like I was recently talking about this with somebody, just how I feel like a new strategy for like self-care and self-awareness that I've been trying to implement is not feeling pressured to make decisions quickly. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think if you have an idea for a project, you know, and you kind of start the initial conversations with a friend, like not feeling, I don't know, too pressured to like commit to it right away, but maybe, mm-hmm. you know, give yourself a month and see how often the project sort of pops back in your mind, or like how relevant it really feels to you. Or kind of like imagining yourself working on the project and, you know, just feeling it out and like seeing if it would actually be a good fit. I think that is a little bit of advice I would give, because I think a lot of times, you know, we see something come up on Instagram or we get an email and it's like, there's a deadline. And then we're just like, ah, like let's do it. And like, let's
race to the deadline.
Yeah. And I don't know, I'm starting to really see that it's okay to see those things and just like put them on the calendar for next year. And
yeah,
if they come back around in your mind, or if you keep mm-hmm. thinking of that project or that mm-hmm. residency or that proposal, you know, to then more sustainably implement like working on it rather than kind of getting caught up in this like pressure to immediately come up with this project. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you hear this podcast and you've already been talking about collaborating with someone and it just serves as like another kind of reminder and you let it simmer a little longer. And, but if you hear this podcast and you're like, got to do a collaboration right now, quick, like, let's
don't do it.
Right. I want this conversation to serve as inspiration, but not as like social pressure. Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that I forget how elsewhere came up for both of us, but it did somehow. And then I think that I can't quite remember if it was you or if it was me, but essentially we were just like, do we want to do it together?
Mm-hmm.
Then I think it was a little while before
we
like ultimately ended up being like, hey, mm-hmm. let's actually like execute that, you know?
And, right.
And I think that like, I used to hear the advice, I think it was right after art school that I heard the advice of just apply to everything.
Mm-hmm. And say yes to everything.
Right. I could not disagree with that more. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the world has changed a little bit. I think that, you know, mental health awareness has become a little bit, you know, better. Mm-hmm. But I still think that, like, sometimes there's that remaining pressure of just mm-hmm. like apply to everything. Like, eventually you'll get it just simply by, like, the, what's it called? Laws of physics or whatever that like law of ratio is, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that that's just quite unhealthy and also not very sustainable, because most applications have a $40 fee to them,
right?
You know, and so I did that 1 year, and then actually, like, said to my husband, I'm so sorry, I mm-hmm. ended up spending like way more than I should have on mm-hmm. application fees, you know. So then the next year, I actually gave myself a restriction and said that I was only going to apply to things that were free. Mm-hmm. And then the following year, I did like a mix of the two. Like mm-hmm. Some of the bigger ones had some fees that I felt were worth it. But I feel like it's the same type of mentality that you were saying, like, think about it some more, mm-hmm. and then maybe even think about it some more. Like, mm-hmm. it's okay to take your time thinking about something and then recognizing your own resources.
Yeah.
And then again, ultimately you'll be a better artist and a better person coming to the table mm-hmm. than, you know, this person that was like out of breath because they're racing towards the deadline.
Yeah. And just like trusting that you are going to be an artist for a long time mm-hmm. and you don't yeah. have to like accomplish everything immediately, you know, mm-hmm. like it can be, like I said, like you can see something and instead of feeling pressured to get the application in within the month, like just make it a goal for next year if it's something mm-hmm. you really care about, you know.
Right. Yeah, actually, to quickly quote a good friend of mine, which is funny because I also quoted them in our first episode together. Mark and Jacqueline Oliver, shout out to them. They're my best friends. But Mark told Jacqueline, who has the same age kids as we do, one time that she was feeling bad about this kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. And he said, he was like, you know what, Jacqueline, you can be an artist at any age, really. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. You cannot be a mother at any age. And the stages of motherhood don't happen at any age, mm-hmm. you know, like this stage of our children is temporal mm-hmm. and you know, we do have a biological clock. So it's like, you can't decide to be a mom at 75. Mm-hmm. You can decide to be an artist at 75. That's one of the most beautiful aspects of an art career, is that, you know, you have 90-year-olds having mm-hmm. a retrospective of their work. It's fantastic. You never really retire mm-hmm. kind of thing. And I tell myself that literally on a monthly basis, like, you know, what do I need to be present for mm-hmm. today, now, in this month, in this stage, you know? And sometimes that's not our career, and that's totally okay. You know, yep. I think that relates to the deadline thing. No, you can put it on your calendar. Your project will probably be stronger next year, actually, right. you know, because you thought about it for a year.
Right. Yes, absolutely. You know. Well, thanks so much for doing this collaboration with me, Lee.
Yeah, and thank you as well. It was so fun.
Thanks for just sharing in conversation about it. This was really fun.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you so much too, Caitlin, for opening up and yeah, talking candidly.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Caitlin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.